I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. A little later in the program, soccer's World Cup. The games are in 2010, but soccer fans around the world are already glued to their TV sets. Why? We'll find out. But first, Grenada's Tillman Thomas was sworn in yesterday as prime minister. His National Democratic Congress led the opposition for 13 years until it won the general election earlier this week. Grenada is not alone in choosing new leadership. Change has occurred across the region this year and last. Here to tell us more about this and developments from the recent meeting of the Caribbean Community, or CARICOM, is Jackie Charles of the Miami Herald. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Talk to me about the election in Grenada. This is, there have been several elections in which there have been changes, and some people are surprised by this. The Prime Minister of Jamaica turned out. I think Trinidad and Tobago is the only place that's held election this year in which the party in power held on. Why is that? Is there a trend that you see?
Well, yes, definitely. We're seeing a trend in the Caribbean region. And some would even argue, if you look at Trinidad and Tobago's elections just a couple of months ago during the latter half of last year, that you had a situation where you had a third party. The opposition was split. When you look at the popular vote, in fact, the opposition got more vote than the incumbent, but because of the Westminster system and how the votes are separated, the incumbent retained power. But clearly what's happening in the Caribbean region is what's happening here. People are seeing a rise in prices, experiencing high fuel electricity bills, and there seems to be this wind of change or this need for change. The interesting trend in many of these cases where we've seen these leaders go to the polls is that they were seeking an unprecedented fourth term, fifth term, third term in office. And the population is saying, no, it's time to bring someone else in.
Were there any specific issues on the table, or is it more the whole question of we need a change?
Actually, in each of these cases, when I followed these elections and just listening to what the voters were saying, talking to some of the experts, talking to folks on the ground, the one thing that kept coming up over and over was the rise in prices. You know, the rise in their standard of living. Because think about it, if you're in the Caribbean, in all of these countries, there's a high importation bill. So you are already paying more than the average American. And so now, if you're in a case like Grenada, where there's double-digit unemployment, where just a few years ago your island was almost flattened by a hurricane, you're like, something needs to happen. Something needs to change. And so by going in, voting out the incumbent, voting in the opposition, what many of these individuals feel is that they're going to see a change in their social and economic living conditions. Now, that's to be seen.
Talk to me about the summit of the Caribbean heads of state, which you attended recently, the CARICOM. First of all, what is this group about and what did they talk about?
Well, the whole deal with it's called the Caribbean Community, or CARICOM. It's 15 nations, mostly English-speaking, with the addition of Haiti and Suriname. They're the two non-English-speaking countries that are part of this coalition. And what they're seeking to do, their big goal is almost to recreate an economic a European Union model in the region. So it's about political, but more so economic integration, a single market and economy where you can have the free movement of people from island to island that are part of this relationship. And what they're saying is that in this global context today, as small island states, we can't do it alone. We need to do it together. And they represent 14 out of 15 votes, because you have a situation where Montserrat, which is still part of the British, is also a member. But in a forum like the United Nations, if you are a country like Venezuela and you're trying to, you know, get to the Security Council, that's 14 votes. That's a block. And what they have demonstrated through the years is that they vote as a block. So right now for them, though, the question that a lot of people in the region, they're asking beyond that, what is the relevancy of CARICOM? How effective can CARICOM be? When we come together as in Antigua last week and they've decided that they are going to launch a $60 million tourism campaign where we're now going to market the Caribbean region as one. It's not just going to be come to Jamaica, come to the Bahamas. It's going to be come to the Caribbean. So it's $60 million. Can these countries shore up? Can they put the money out there? And are they going to be a unified front? That is the question that we're asking, and that's what everyone is waiting to see, because this movement has been around now for 35 years, at least. They just celebrated their 35th anniversary while in Antigua. And so with some, even among the ranks, we're saying that we need to stop acting like a community of sovereign states, and we need to act more as a unified front.
I understand that the crime was also on the agenda at CARICOM. Why is that?
Well, it's interesting. Today in our newspaper, the Miami Herald, we have a story about the number of deportations being up. And a number of these countries are blaming the spike in crime on the increase in deportations, especially from the United States, although the U.S. government disagrees with that assessment. But we are seeing a trend, a spike in crime. And it's not just about crime, but the kinds of crime, you know, drive-by, things that just did not take place in the Caribbean region. You're looking at a oil-rich country like Trinidad and Tobago right now is struggling with this crime issue. Usually when you thought about crime, you know, there would be other countries. You know, Jamaica has been notorious for years with a very high crime rate. But what we're also seeing, even in a little tiny island like Antigua and Barbuda, they are also wrestling with this issue of crime. And in fact, what you're also seeing, though, is a response, a creative response. They are looking to Scotland Yard. They're looking to Canada. They're even looking to the United States, bringing in experts, bringing in retired police officers. In the case of Antigua and Barbuda, there's a retired Canadian police officer who now heads that police force, while in Jamaica and Trinidad, they have retired Scotland Yard officers who are providing support, and they are now members of that police force.
We've also been tracking the tense relationship between the Dominican Republic and the Haitians who live there. Can you just tell us a little bit more about that? What's the backstory here? And is this the kind of issue that gets discussed at CARICOM?
Well, you know, the backstory is that Haiti once owned the Dominican Republic, and that the Dominican Republic celebrates its independence from Haiti and not Spain. And that is a relationship that goes back, you know, years and years. And so what you have is a situation where I don't like you, but you're my neighbor, and somehow it's a mutually beneficial relationship. You've got this border between the two countries. It's a porous border. Haitians are used as laborers. They're working in areas called the Bataille, or these like the sugar plantations. But then you have this whole issue with race that's underlining, where now you're seeing reports, as Amnesty International reported, that Dominicans who are dark-skinned are being deported to Haiti because the belief is that they're Haitians and not Dominicans. At the same time, you have children of Haitian immigrants in the Dominican Republic who were born in the Dominican Republic, and they have no access to a birth certificate, nothing that says that I'm Dominican. In fact, they aren't even regarded as Dominican.
So even though they're born there, they're not entitled to full citizenship rights.
They're not entitled to full citizenship.
That must be a very tense issue between these two countries.
Well, it is. But at the same time, Haiti argues that any child born of Haitian parentage, because the situation just doesn't exist in the Dominican Republic, but the Bahamas also has the same rule. You know, when you're 18, they allow you to apply for citizenship if your mother is not Bahamian. But in terms of the DR, it's, you know, you're born of Haitian parentage, you're born here, that doesn't mean that you're a Dominican. But what Haiti says is, if you're Haitian, go to a Haitian consulate, go to a Haitian embassy, provide proof that both of your parents are Haitian or that you're born of Haitian lineage, and you are entitled to Haitian citizenship. But, you know, that the argument has been there is that these are children, they speak Spanish, they don't speak Creole, they have been brought up in that Dominican environment, they're more Dominican than Haitian, and that they should be entitled to citizenship.
That's very interesting. Jackie Charles of the Miami Herald was kind enough to join us from member station WLRN in Miami. Jackie, thanks so much for that update.
Thank you.